but Luciana, it's a great privilege for me to give the final word of the conference to Luciano Pires. We were classmates here many years ago. He surpassed me then, he surpasses me now. But he's a dear brother, and his wife, Luciani, and his children are here for a year, as you've heard him reflect. And it's a great joy that he agreed to come and finish up and conclude our time. So thank you, Luciano.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you all for staying. And I can only, you know, just express my deep gratitude for such an honor. I studied here from 98 to 2002, and by God's grace and for His glory, I earned a degree, praise the Lord. And for me to stand here just having these closing remarks, it's probably the greatest speaking engagement honor that I've ever received for some reasons. First, for being part of a Francis Schaeffer Lectures or Heritage, the ministry established in Brazil, my wife and I, is heavily based on the teachings and the life of Mr. and Mrs. Schaeffer. Also because Mark is a good friend, Jerem is a dear friend too, and just want to honor them. And for also to be able to speak a little bit about this topic, not actually speak about it, but give some thoughts from a Protestant who lived in a Latin America country, probably the largest Catholic country in the world, and what it represents. So you heard me saying before about the things that I commended, that I commend highly about the Catholicism in Brazil. It's by far the Christian branch, if I may say so, that's engaged in social relief in Brazil. By far. I mean, our evangelical denominations don't get even close to it, and this is something to be commended. As far as the whole topic we've been discussing here, that is, if I can put in my own words and, you know, just having a paraphrasing it here, how the world sees us Christians as we are divided in these two great groups, Catholics and Protestants. I believe that some of you are familiar with the trilogy or the books of the Lord of the Rings. If you are not, you know, Matt, right? Still time to read them. It's great, and I'm not going to give especially Dr. Matt's big spoilers here. But what you see on that book is that the big, big name or guys or powers or whatever you want to name it, they didn't see what was going on underneath their noses on that book. When they realized it, it was late. You know what I'm talking about, those who read the book. I don't want to give this spoiler, but about Sauron, you know, being concerned about the big battles that are out there and forgot to look to that very small creature, a hobbit, that was carrying a ring. That was actually the meaning for the whole structure of kingdom that Sauron desired. Being part of a conference like this is challenging. I mean, Dr. Duriani was my professor here. I've heard a lot of Dr. Sean Lucas, Jerem Bars, and now Eduardo Chavarria and Dr. Matz. I forgot your first name, Brian. It's so challenging. I told Mark that I was accepting this with fear and trembling, actually. But I believe I have just a few things to say, because I'm from a country that was discovered in 1500. 21st of April 1500 is our official discovering date. And by 1549, the Portuguese crown, King if I'm not mistaken, John III sent the first Jesuits missionaries to Brazil. There are a lot to commend, actually, about this. They established great schools that are in Brazil up to this time. They were responsible for taking the colonization of Brazil to another level, where they actually didn't agree. They fought for freedom, actually. They don't agree with slavery. However, when they reached the native Brazilians, their message was, you have two options. Or you either going to become a Catholic, or you're going to become a Catholic. Those are the two options they had it. And sadly speaking, not all of them, but many of them forced those native Brazilians to be converted to Catholicism. You know, if you get this as being the roots for our history in Brazil, that continued. So if we move now 500 years, not for the Reformation's sake, but for the discovery of Brazil's sake, and start looking at what our people believe in Brazil. Most people are still, if you ask them, they're going to say, I'm a Catholic. And by our census, the last one was in the year 2000, about 65% of our population declares to be Catholic. However, great number of them, probably around 40%, are only nominal or traditional Catholics. Our constitution was up to the year 1891, had on it that our official religion was Catholicism. So just pinpoint what I'm going to tell you now. Just a brief sketch about our colonization, where the catechism practice was enforced by law, or by force, by power. And you come to a country that proclaimed its independence on 1822, but only by 1849 or something like that is that the official religion of Brazil is not Catholicism anymore. However, in practice, that lasted up to the 70s. And now I'm coming to my remarks here. When you have this discussion about what Protestants think and what Catholics think, my main question is, I think someone actually raised it here, how are our people responding to it, in our churches? We planted a church about 5 years ago, and most of the new people that came to this church, they came either from the new Pentecostal movement in Brazil or either from Catholicism in Brazil. And let me say something here. I really want to make this a point. Some of these Catholics that came to our church, they didn't become believers. They were believers already. They just made a move from one branch of Christianity to another. Well, others, I would say the majority, they made a profession of faith because they didn't understand the gospel. And let me put another remark here on this point. Looking from from this podium here, I believe that only Paul and Bella are not Americans here, if I'm right. If you're not American, that's okay. But Catholicism in the United States is much different from Catholicism in Brazil, for certain. And I dare to say in the whole Latin world. For Brazil, Vatican II is still hovering over our country. It has made, if you think as a tornado, I know that that's not, a good analogy. But if you think as a tornado, it's that funnel that's up there and hasn't touchdown. He hasn't made the landfall yet. In parts of Northeast Brazil, there are still places where Protestant churches or missionaries even are persecuted. There are places, a few ones, I was amazed by found that still sell indulgences. So we have that practice, especially in the northeast of Brazil. If you talk to someone in Brazil, as I said, that has been part of the Catholic tradition, either by birth or by conversion, when I say that Vatican II has not touched down, most people that I talked, they would say that the real and only church is the Catholic Church. You probably don't get this here. I mean, often when you're speaking or talking to, you know, Catholics here in the U.S. Why? And I know I have church history professors here, especially a very dear friend of mine, Dr. Barker, but I dare to say that the Protestant influence here in the U.S. influenced a lot the way the Catholics think and practice, you know, religion in the U.S. It's different from Brazil. Dr. Cheveria mentioned about, you know, the way that we can allow others to disciple us. And as he said, he was discipled by great Reformed thinkers. And when we look down, I mean, not look down upon, but look to Brazil, say down because of the map, we see that some of that, you know, allowing the discipleship or discipling happening from other thoughts or from other, you know, ways of thinking Christianity has happened. But however, this is beautiful from the outside. What has really happened for the vast majority of these, I wouldn't say only Roman Catholic thinking, but also for some evangelicals, is syncretism. That's different. Syncretism is seeing something that looks good and bringing that and, you know, embracing that for your religion, for your outward practice, for bringing to you a form of, I don't want to use that word in the so negative way, but a form of earning what you need to get to please your God. So, for instance, the charismatic movement in Brazil, which I have dear friends who are part of it in the Roman Catholic Church, they have the statement or motto saying, we do all for Jesus, but nothing without Mary. And as a Protestant, I believe we lack the respect and love, and actually we lack the understanding of the position that Mary has, how she has to be honored. I taught at a seminary back in Brazil, and one of our students was almost cast out of our seminary, Presbyterian seminary, because in one of his sermons, homiletic sermons, he said, and Mary, Mother of God. We had a council to discuss that. How come a Presbyterian say that Mary is the Mother of God? I was brave enough and said, was she not? Because she is. There's a song that I love to hear here in the West during the holidays season. Mary, did you know when they says that when you kiss the face of your baby, you're kissing the face of God. So, in one hand, we lack the honor or, you know, to understand that. On the other hand, what we have seen in Brazil is that Catholicism puts Mary in so high standard that she is not one of us. She was full of grace, that's what Luke says.
for being chosen by God to be the mother of his son. But she needed the same grace you and I need to be called children of God. That's what we believe. That's what our tradition, if I may use that word now, believes it to. So why I'm bringing this all up here and why I'm going towards what I'm the closing part of it, because it's great, it's wonderful, it has to happen, this type of discussions. Places where people come together, Catholics, with such a respect as we've seen here into this reformed, environment. Paul and Bella are here with me, and they can witness with me that doesn't happen easily in Brazil, this type of debate and respect. But you have to think how everything we discuss here, we get down to the people we love and minister to. I had good friendship with some strong theologians, Catholic theologians in Brazil. One of them is actually one of the leading theologians in Latin language in Brazil. And my whole question, my whole life about Catholicism, because I was brought up half Catholic and half Presbyterian, in going to Mass in one Sunday and to Sunday school on the other Sunday, so kind of confusing. But my main question was, how about Mary's roles in salvation? And he explained to me, quote, or paraphrasing, he said, "Luciano, I once went to a celebration in a monastery in the southeast of Brazil where monks and nuns got together for this big party. And one very talented nun sculpted or carved this beautiful image of Mary holding Jesus, the whole world at their feet, and a snake that was crawling around Mary and going through Mary. And that snake also make Mary bleed, and the blood goes upon the world or on the world." And I look up at that nun and said, "You know you're wrong, don't you?" That's what the Catholic theologian said, because that snake should go through Jesus, and it is his blood that goes on the world. But he also said something that was said to me at least at that time. "Luciano, that culture, that thought is so part of our life in Brazil that we don't have the power to dismiss it." So when I listen to people like Dr. Matz, Dr. Cheveria, and some of these friends I have in Brazil, and understand that the Catholicism that's up here is not the one that's down, if you may use this word, down this earth. What has been, discussed and agreed with on the points that we agree with, at least for a Brazilian perspective, a Midwest Brazilian perspective, it can be even, narrower here, doesn't exist. It's sad to say. But on that regard, the Reformation that started 500 years ago when Dr. Cheveria brought the Reformation motto, "Sempre Reformanda," that's the motto, needs to continue to reach out to those people. I'm talking about especially those Catholics in Brazil. One challenge that I always had to my church, because we were receiving lots of Catholics, was before you try to convert or evangelize a Catholic, make sure he or she is not a believer already. Because Dr. Doriani pointed out, Christology in the Catholic Church is the same as we have here. And when people realize that it's through Christ, by grace, by a given faith that we are saved, we have lots in common. Oh man, you can't imagine how much in common we have. That's the reason I mentioned yesterday that one fine lady of our church, she moved from the Catholicism to our church because I attended her grandmother Seventh-day Mass. I'm not saying that I agree with it, because there are points where we all disagree with it. But I believe you have to honor one another. We have to understand what role Jesus plays in our lives. It's not tolerance. Sometimes tolerance is not a synonym of love at all. If I come to you and say, I tolerate you, doesn't sound harsh. But if I come to you and say, I love you, I want to be part of your life. I want to be part of the rescuing of this community for God's glory and by His grace. Sunday, you go to your Mass, I'm going to my church. There are matters of worship that I have to be sincere with it. I think we can discuss them, you know, for many, many years, but I don't believe we're going to come to common grounds on it. That's okay. That's okay. But there's one theme that unifies us all. That is Jesus Christ. And then, and Him has to be the part that we all agree upon and with it. Once I was in a little debate with fine friend, Presbyterian pastor, because he found out that while I was, you know, we say, celebrating the Lord's Supper, I don't use the words, I don't say that the table belongs to anyone that's part or belongs to a genuine evangelical church. I never use that phrase because I believe that the table is not mine, it's not a denominational table, it belongs to Jesus, to anyone who confesses His name and claims Him as Savior. And he said, Luciano, those were his words, you know that you can be accused and face trial for giving communion to a Catholic. I said, well, let me say something else. Every time before you have communion at our church, we say from our hearts the Apostles' Creed. Isn't that common to Roman Catholics? To all of us as well? He looked at me, he thought for a little while and said, you know what? If a Roman Catholic, from his heart, says the Apostles' Creed, he's my brother and my sister. And here I'm standing as a still ordained Presbyterian minister in Brazil. We need those discussions, and here I'm closing. We need these discussions, we need these debates. But what really matters is that our final paper presented at Evangelical Society or at ECT is the way that my notes on the commentaries will be. I'm a big fan of all of those who spoke here today, and I have two more to be fan of them now. And no, those who are going to read and meditate on your words out up here are probably you guys. But those who need those words in practice are out there. If our words don't make to the place where God is acting. There's no use for them. You're going to grow in our knowledge. You're going to claim that you're getting together even more to the point that we know we won't be able to compromise any of our beliefs. But the transformation that you have to have before the watching world won't happen. This is my challenge to you, that is to me personally. Thank you.